ददौ कुर्वन् गीतामृतं ददौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। हरे कृष्ण। वेलकम बैक टू अ भगवद्गीता भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स। वी आर इन 9th चैप्टर। वी डिस्कस द टू एक्सट्रीम्स इन द प्रीवियस वर्स। दोज हु मिसअंडरस्टैंड कृष्णा द मायावादीज अवजानन्ति मां मूढा एंड मोहाशा मोह कर्माणो 9.11 and 12, and those who understand Krishna properly and surrender to Him with love, that is, Mahatmanastu Maam Partha and Satatam Kirtayanto Maam. Now, in between these two, there is a spectrum of other people, and Krishna will talk about them in 9.15 and elaborate about them in the subsequent verses. So, let's look at 9.15. Jnana Yajnena Chapyanye Yajanto Maam Upasate एकत्वेन पृथक्त्वेन बहुधा विश्वतो मुखम्। सो कृष्णा इज टेलिंग हियर अदर्स वर्शिप हिम थ्रू नॉलेज ज्ञान यज्ञेन चापि अन्ये अदर्स वर्शिप हिम थ्रू ज्ञान यज्ञ यजन्तो माम उपासते। सो कृष्णा इज एक्नॉलेजिंग दैट दे वर्शिप हिम एंड हाउ डू दे डू इट एकत्वेन। एकत्वेन मीन्स थ्रू वननेस। पृथक्त्वेन बहुधा दैट द सुप्रीम लॉर्ड मैनिफेस्ट इन मेनी फॉर्म्स एंड देन बहुधा विश्व एंड देन विश्वतो मुखम। विश्वतो मुखम इज एज द यूनिवर्सल फॉर्म। सो नाउ एक्चुअली दिस वर्स विल बी अ सीड फॉर अ लॉट ऑफ डिस्कशन। सो बप्रित व्हाट आर दिस थ्री रेफरिंग टू? द एकत्वेन रेफर्स टू द दोज हु हैव द कंसेप्शन ऑफ वननेस and they are here Krishna is referring to them as what he is referring to is Brahmavadis. The Mayavadis have already been talked about in 9.11 and 12. So this will be addressed briefly by Krishna and Prabhupada will address him in the purport, and this Ekatvena will be elaborated again in the 12th chapter when Arjuna asks the questions among the personalists and impersonalists who are better. And then Pruthaktvena Bahudha, that refers to those who worship the devatas, and of course there can be demigod worship with different conceptions, and we'll discuss that. But that concept of pruthaktvena bahudha means that there are many. Pruthak is different and bahudha is many. That there are many manifestations of the divine and we can worship different manifestations. That conception when people have, that Krishna will elaborate in this chapter itself, starting from verse 20 onwards till verse 28. Where he will contrast demigod worship with pure devotional service. And then Vishwato Mukham refers to the idea of the Vishwa being the Mukha and the Rupa of the Lord, that is the universal form. So that will be mentioned briefly from verses 16 to 19 in this chapter, and then later on it will be elaborated again in the 11th chapter. And just prior to this, in 13-14 verses, what Krishna had talked about pure devotional service, Krishna will talk about this towards the end of this chapter, 9.29 to 34, and then he will talk about in the 10th chapter also, till 10.11, after which Arjuna will ask a question about Vibhuti Yoga, and Krishna will answer that question. So, this is an overview of, so this verse is central to understanding the subsequent flow of the Gita. So, here Pruthaktvena Bahudha is elaborated immediately after that. In the next section of this chapter, Vishwato Mukham is elaborated. In the next section, the Pruthaktvena Bahudha is elaborated in the section after the immediate section. So 16 to 19 will elaborate Vishwato Mukham. 20 to 28 will elaborate on Pruthaktvena Bahudha. First universal form is talked about, then the demigod worship is talked about. And then this same Vishwato Mukham will be talked about again in the 11th chapter. And Ekatvena will be talked about in the 12th chapter. So what are these three conceptions? See, when people want to be God conscious, it's not that suddenly they start thinking about God. Their conceptions evolve gradually. So here, what are the three conceptions? So one may think of, oh, around me I see this universe, it's so great. When I think about this universe is so great, then I start thinking that, that this universe itself is sacred, this universe itself is divine. And this can be a form of pantheism. Pantheism means the idea that everything is God. So one may start worshipping the universe itself as God, and one may visualize different aspects of the universe as parts of that absolute truth. So here, the concept is that bigness is associated with greatness, and greatness is associated with God. That which is, so God is the greatest, so therefore He must be the biggest. And the biggest thing that we see in the world is the universe. So therefore, the sun and the moon are the eyes, are the eyes of absolute truth. The mountains are the bones of the absolute truth. These sort of conceptions are talked about, and that's what the meditation is. And of course, there are certain sacrifices also which are performed in the Vishwarupa Upasana. That we'll discuss in the next part, next few verses. But the point here is that in the vastness and the pervasiveness of the universe, one conceives of the absolute truth. Then Prithaktvena Bahudha is the idea that, yes, okay, this universe is vast and huge and sacred in one sense, but ultimately the universe is temporary. So one's consciousness evolves further, and one thinks that actually beyond this there is some reality, and or rather beyond this there are some beings that are manifested. So who are controlling the various aspects of the universe. So Prithaktvena Bahudha refers to, yes, there is some ultimate reality, and that ultimate reality is manifesting as the various controllers. Now how it is manifesting as the various controllers, that may not be clear, but one sees the rains and one thinks there must be a controller for the rains. One thinks there must be a controller for the sun. So in this way, one starts thinking that there are so many awe-inspiring features in nature, and they must require some controllers. And one is not very clear, but one thinks they must also be having some connection with the absolute truth. This is how one comes to the concept of polytheism. So from pantheism to polytheism. Pantheism is the idea that everything is God. Polytheism is that there are many gods. So Pruthaktvena Bahudha. And then after that, one starts thinking that actually, you know, everything in the material world is temporary. There must be some reality which is ultimately eternal. And one starts thinking, I also have longing for eternity. And one thinks beyond the changes of this world, there must be some unchanging substratum. And I and that unchanging substratum are the same. That's how one comes to the conception of spiritual oneness. And that's ekatvena. So, Bahudha Vishvato Mukham is the idea that nature itself, that the universal form is to be worshipped. And the idea is that the various manifestations of the various manifestations of the absolute truth, as the controllers, the universal controllers, are to be worshipped. And after that, beyond this is the spiritual reality, and I am one with that spiritual reality. So, ekatvena, one worships them. Now, Vishwanatha Chakra Thakur explains that this hierarchy progresses from downwards to upwards. That means Vishvato Mukham is the lowest, then Pruthaktvena Bahudha is intermediate, and Ekatvena is highest. Why? Because the conception is moving from material towards spiritual. First one is basically thinking of material bigness in terms of size. Then after that, one is thinking of the controllers. One is thinking about consciousness. And then after that, one is thinking about the spiritual consciousness, the one, in the form of the oneness that lies beyond and below matter. Not below, below in terms of underlying matter, unifying matter, controlling matter. So, in that sense, this is the evolution of thought. Now, Srila Prabhupada explains it oppositely. And we look at this. So, let's understand this once again. Vishwarupa Upasana, when it happens, this is Vishvato Mukham. So in Vishwarupa Upasana, what happens? The Vishwarupa, the aspects of the universal form, are used as material meditational tools to reach the absolute truth. So one conceives the absolute truth in terms of the bigness of the universe. We'll discuss about Vishwarupa a little later. Now this Pruthaktvena Bahudha, the various manifestations. Now, different people can do it in different way, but one particular way might be as Pratik Upasana. Pratik Upasana. That means that one considers the demigods as symbols of Brahman. So as pratika, as representatives, as symbols of Brahman, and worship the demigod accordingly. And ekatvena, what is mentioned over here is, that is ahangropasana. Ahangropasana is one worships oneself, thinking of oneself as the absolute truth. And those who are like this, those angraha pasakas, are not mayavadis, because they don't offend Krishna's form. That is something very important to understand, that these ahangropasakas, they may conceive of themselves as one of the absolute truth, but conceiving of oneself as one of the absolute truth is in and of itself not mayavad, and it is not necessarily always offensive. What makes mayavad offensive is the notion that Krishna's form is material, Krishna's form is illusory, Krishna's form is false, and that one has to go beyond Krishna's form. That notion is what is offensive, and that is the notion that one needs to go beyond, or one needs to give up. The idea that one has to go beyond Krishna's form to some higher reality is offensive conception. So these are the ahangropasakas. And then beyond that, after that, there is another way of looking at this, which Srila Prabhupada uses. So I'll explain the hierarchy now of these three. So from the philosophical perspective, so to explain these different perspectives, let's look at it from the perspective, a philosophical perspective. The mayavadis can be said to be better than the karmis. Why is that? Because the karmis are engaged in sense gratification, but the mayavadis are detached from sense gratification. So if we consider from the perspective of the level of philosophical insight, the mayavadis have understood to some extent that this material world cannot provide happiness. So they have, we could say in one way, a greater philosophical insight. So many of the mayavadis may be renunciates, they may be learned in scripture, and they are pursuing the absolute truth. So from the philosophical perspective, they may be philosophically more sophisticated, philosophically more insightful than the karmis. So in that sense, some of the mayavadis may also live life in goodness. So when they lead life in goodness, then karmis may be living life in passion also. So in that sense, from that perspective, we could say the mayavadis are more evolved. But then, this is the one perspective. But the other perspective is the devotional perspective. In the devotional perspective, one's position is not determined so much by where one is, but by what one's attitude towards Krishna is. So that means, if one is blasphemous of Krishna, one is offensive towards Krishna, then in that sense, karmis may become better than the mayavadis. Why? Because the karmis have a greater chance of coming closer to Krishna, because they are not offensive towards Krishna. The mayavadis have a greater chance of coming closer towards Krishna because they don't have such a good chance, because they are offensive to Krishna. In fact, what they think is they can't come to closer to Krishna because their goal is to go beyond Krishna. So because of their offensiveness, for them to make devotional advancement is generally difficult. That's why we have to consider these two different perspectives. So same way, when we consider these two different perspectives, what Srila Prabhupada explains is that the ahangropa, so these three hierarchy level which Chakravarti Pada has explained, that the Vishwarupasakas are the lower, then there is a Pruthaktvena Bahudha, and there is ahangropasana. So this is with respect to, say, philosophical understanding. You want to understand that there is a spiritual reality, and that spiritual reality should be worshipped. So from the conception of one's capacity to conceive of the absolute truth in terms of eternal existence and spiritual existence, the ekatvena is higher. But then if you turn it around, look at it from the devotional perspective, and the conception of worship is most prominent in Vishwarupasana and least prominent in Ahangropasana. Why? Because if I am worshipping myself, then actually it's a paradox of terms. It's a sort of self-contradiction. What do you mean by it? I worship myself. If I say I am my own God, I worship myself, it's quite an antithesis of devotion. So it's not very theistically evolved or devotionally conducive conception. So higher than that is the conception of Prithaktva in a Bahuda. Oh, there are various devatas and they should be worshipped. So, but higher than that is the conception of there is one absolute truth and that absolute is manifesting in Vishwarupa and I should worship that. So the concept of worship, which is conducive to devotion, is most prominent in Vishwarupa Upasana and least prominent in Ahangra Upasana. And that's why from that perspective, when Srila Prabhupada explains this hierarchy, he focuses on the devotional perspective throughout his purports, because devotional service is the ultimate conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, as we will see in its progression. It's especially clear in 18.66. Sarvadharman prityajamam ekam sharanam raja. So here, by focusing on the devotional perspective, where worship is critically important, and for that the conception of the difference between worship and worshipper are important. So Ahangra Upasana is the lowest, and then there is Vishwarupa Upasana, and then there is Prithaktve, and there is Vishwarupa Upasana. So let's look at Srila Prabhupada's purport, which explains things from this perspective. So Prabhupada explains here that out of the three, the lowest, those who worship themselves as Supreme Lord, thinking themselves to be monist, are most predominant. This is a widespread conception today. Such people think themselves to be the Supreme Lord, and this mentality, they worship themselves. This is also a type of God worship, for they can understand that they are not the material body, but are actually spiritual soul. At least such a sense is prominent. So here what Srila Prabhupada is saying is that this is also a type of God worship. It's important that that means Ahangra Upasana, because it also involves some kind of upasana. It involves a conception of eternal existence. It involves the conception of worship. So it is also a type of God worship. So you know, this is clearly not referring to Mayavad. This is referring to something different, and it's one type of Brahmavad. So now let's look at Vishwarupa Upasana, which is described from the next set of verses, 16th verse onwards. Let's look at it. So Krishna explains in the next verses what he has talked about in 4.24. He will give more evolved understanding of this in 9.16. Let's look at it. Aham kraturaham yajnaha swadhaham aham aushadham mantro ham aham evajyam aham agnir aham hutam. So aham kratur aham yajnaha. Aham kratur. So here actually Krishna is talking about the various elements of the sacrifice. He says, I am the Vedic ritual, I am the Sayagya. So Kratu refers to the Vedic ritual. Yajna refers to the Puranic ritual, Smriti sacrifice. That means there are sacrifices which are mentioned in different scriptures. And accordingly, the scriptures, whatever the sacrifices are mentioned, they sometimes have different technical names. So, in a general non-technical sense, we can say Kratu refers to sacrifice. Specifically, Kratu refers to sacrifice mentioned in the Vedas. The four Vedas. And Yajna refers to sacrifice mentioned in the Smriti scriptures. Krishna is saying, I am both the sacrifices. Svadhaham, I am what is offered in it. So oblation. Then I am the healing herb. Svadhaham aham aushadham mantroham. Whatever the mantra that are chanted, I am that mantra. Aham evajam. So when the melted part of the key is offered, that is also I am. And aham agnir aham hutam. I am the fire. So basically, Krishna is helping us to see that when we perform a fire sacrifice, it is not just some material elements interacting. It is actually ultimately a manifestation of the absolute truth. Now, we will see the evolution of thought in the Bhagavad Gita. In 4.24, what had happened was, all the elements of the sacrifice were identified with Brahma. What was 4.24? Brahma arpanam brahmahavir brahmagno brahmanahutam brahmaivatena gantavyam brahma karma samadhina. So there it was described that all the elements of the sacrifice are Brahma. But here what is described? It's accepted. But here the thought is taken further and is said that actually it's aham. All of it, I am that. Aham kraturaham yajnaha. I am all this. So what is the point? What is the point over there? That when the Nishkam Karma Yogi is performing sacrifices, at that time Nishkam Karma Yogi doesn't know what is that absolute truth. But as one moves forwards, one starts understanding what that absolute truth is. So here, when a person is a devotee, from the devotional perspective, it's clear that ultimately all the elements of the yajna are manifestation of Bhagwan Sri Krishna, of Krishna himself. So Krishna makes it very clear, aham kraturaham yajna. So what was mentioned there, in terms of the seeker's level at that time as Brahma, is now clearly specified as aham. Is how the thought of the Bhagavad Gita is progressive, and it is revealing the same concepts in a more Krishna-centered way. Now Krishna explains how he pervades all aspects of existence. So pitaham asya jagato mata dhata pitamaha vedyam pavitram omkara riksam yajurevacha. So pitaham asya jagato, that I am the father of this whole universe, of all living beings in this universe. And not only I am the father, mata dhata pitamaha, I am the mother, I am the sustainer, and I am the grandfather also. Vedyam pavitram omkara. So vedyam, ultimately all of the object of knowledge that we have, it's ultimately he, vedyam pavitram omkara. So I am the omkar, the sacred sound, syllable. And the purifier, Prabhupada says that I am pavitram. So whatever purifies us, that is also Krishna only. And then riksam yajurevacha. And I am also the Vedas. So what is the point over here? What is the connection with what has been going on? Actually, the point is, in Vishwarupa Upasana, one starts conceiving of everything in the universe as ultimately connected with and manifesting the Absolute Truth. So here also same point is made, pitaham asya jagato, that actually I am the father of all living beings. So in this world we have different supports, different inspirations, different shelters, and Krishna is saying I am all of them. So I am the father, I am the mother, I am the grandsire. So now, is this to be taken literally? Now sometimes people have this conception that, you know, when some devotees start practicing spiritual life, and sometimes their parents oppose. So when the parents oppose, then the parents say, you should obey us, Matru Devo Bhava, Pitru Devo Bhava. So is Krishna supporting something similar over here, that mother is God, father is God? Yes, the mother and father are God, but in what sense? Is that statement Matru Devo Pitru Devo a literal statement? If it were, the mother and father are God, then we would have two gods, not one God. And then if the mother wants the son to become a doctor and the father wants the son to become an engineer, so which God is the son to follow? The mother God or the father God? And if the mother and father have a conflict, you know, whose side is the son supposed to take? Do gods have conflicts among themselves? So the point is not to disrespect the parents, obviously. The point is to recognize statements in their context. The context is that actually the mother and the father are manifestations of the Absolute Truth. In this world there are many things which sustain us, which assist us in our onward journey, materially as well as spiritually. So whoever has helped us in any way, we are grateful for that. But at the same time, we also recognize that there is something which is to be the ultimate reality. So we are grateful to our parents, but here the point that Krishna is making is that ultimately, whoever are the shelters in this world, whatever is benefiting us, it is ultimately a manifestation of Him. It is who is benefiting us through those things. So it is He who is giving us shelter. So it is Krishna who is giving us His love through these things. It is Krishna who is giving us shelter, strength through the mother, through the father, through the grandfather. It is He who is giving us knowledge. It is He who is purifying us. It is who has given us the Vedas. So in the sense that ultimately everything is coming from Him, everything gets its potency from Him, this verse is to be understood. And we will see this concept repeated again in the 10th chapter in terms of Vibhuti. At that time also we will discuss it further. So here when Krishna is talking about this particular spiritual vision of the Vedic Yajna sacrifices, the focus is on seeing everything as connected with Him. So here now Srila Prabhupada's purport, might seem a little confusing. So Prabhupada says, these living entities who appear to be our father, mother, etc. are nothing but Krishna. So then Prabhupada says further, not only are our father and mother parts and parcel of Krishna, but the creator, grandfather, grandmother, grandfather, etc. are also Krishna. Actually, any living entity being part and parcel of Krishna is Krishna. So the point is, with Prabhupada emphasizing the philosophical principle of achintya bheda bheda. The part is non-different from the whole, because the part also is a manifestation of the whole, and part contains, part is qualitatively similar to the whole. So, in that sense, every living entity is also Krishna. So, after describing this, then Krishna will move forward and describe how, again he emphasizes the same principle next verse, that whatever gives us shelter is ultimately he only. Gatir bharta prabhu sakshi nivasa sharanam suhrut prabhava pralaya sthanam nidhanam bijamayam. So here he explains gatir bharta. Gati is the ultimate destination. He is bharta, he is the maintainer. Then prabhu, he is the lord, he is the master. Sakshi, he is the indwelling witness. He knows everything that we are doing. Nivasaha, he is the shelter where ultimately we are all residing. Sharanam, he is the ultimate object of refuge and surrender for us. Suhrut, he is our greatest friend. Prabhava, pralaya, sthanam, that actually when creation takes place, it unfolds from him. When dissolutions takes place, pralaya, sthanam, where it rests, that sthan is ultimately him only. Nidhanam bijam avayam, he is the resting place of everything. And bijam avayam refers to, he is the imperishable seed. Krishna has talked about the concept of bijam avayam earlier also in the 7th chapter when he talked about how he is the essence of everything. Bijam mam sarvabhutanam vidhiparta sanatanam. So, bija sanatana, we discussed the concept of imperishable seed. Normally, when a seed gives rise to a tree, the seed no longer exists. But Krishna is such that, now from him so many living entities come, from Mahavishnu so many universes come, but Krishna remains as he is, Krishna never gets depleted. So bija avyaya. Now from, you can say from father also many sons can come, but that doesn't mean the father doesn't get depleted. The father is going to grow old, get deceased, and eventually succumb to time. So, but Krishna is avyaya. So this is actually a verse which very wonderfully explains what is God. How does it explain what is God? These are, we can have a definition of God in terms of he is the generator, organizer, destroyer, he's the source of everything, he's the absolute truth. Yeah, but in terms of relationship with us and the things around us, this is a very beautiful verse to meditate on the absolute truth. Gatir bharta prabhu sakshi. You know, in this world, so many different people give us love. They may give us show kindness to us. They may grant us shelter. As devotees, we feel grateful to whoever helps us. And at the same time, we also recognize that it is Krishna who is helping us through them. When Srila Prabhupada was on the Jaladuta going to America, at that time he maintained a diary. And the extracts of the diary are there in Lila Amrut. And the diary has also been published as a separate book. So there, Prabhupada mentions that, you know, he writing in his diary in the early days of this tour, before he gets the heart attack. So he says that, you know, in this ship, there is abundant supply of vegetables and grains so that I can have vegetarian food. Although most of the sailors here are non-vegetarians, but they have arranged for adequate stock of vegetables. So Prabhupada had got some simple cereals for himself, and he was planning to eat just that if there was no vegetarian food available. Prabhupada was prepared for that. But here, so he's grateful and he's writing, you know, thanks to Lord Krishna for enlightening Sumti Muraji from within her heart to make all these arrangements. This is Prabhupada's consciousness. Now he knows this ship belongs to Sumti Muraji and she has arranged it. But Prabhupada is understanding that how is Prabhupada not just appreciating Sumti Muraji, he is also appreciating Krishna. Now Krishna is in the heart of Sumti Muraji and Krishna has given her the intelligence that this is a Swami who is a vegetarian and he is going on our ship. So you should arrange for things properly. So a devotee doesn't just see Krishna and doesn't just see material things at the material level, but a devotee also sees things beyond the material level to the devotional level. So Prabhupada was of course respectful and grateful to Sumati Maharaji for the help that he provided, she had provided. But along with that, he also saw the hand of Krishna over there. That's how as devotees, when others help us, we should be able to see both. We should be able to see the hand of Krishna as well as the be grateful to whoever is helping us. How we will be able to express that gratitude will vary from time, place, circumstance. But the important point is, we understand that whatever whoever is doing for us, it is ultimately Krishna who is doing for us through that person. So some people may say that when a devotee gets sick, then devotees go to doctor and do operation and doctor saves life. Actually, yes, we are grateful to the doctor, then doctor strives and helps to save a devotee's life. At the same time, we understand the ultimate decision maker is not the doctor, it is Krishna. So we are grateful to the doctor, but we are also grateful to Krishna for his help. In this way, there is this multi-level understanding of how things are acting. So then, Krishna now continues to explain how the various universal manifestations are connected with him. Tapamyahamaham varsham nigrunami utsrujami cha amritam chaiva mrityuscha sadasachaham arjuna. So tapamyaham. So he says, it is I who give heat. Aham varsham. It is I who cause rains. And what about rains? Nigrunami utsrujami cha. It is I who hold back rains and it is I who send forth rains. Amritam chaiva mrityuscha. He says, I am immortality and I am death. Sad asad chaham arjuna. I am death and I am birth. Sad asad chaham. So what is the point being talked about over here? Basically, I am sad asad can mean matter and spirit. It can mean cause and effect various places. The point here is, again, we see everything in the universe as connected with its absolute truth. So, even from the point of material science, the sun is critical for existence. And the sun gives heat and light. So, without heat, we would not be able to survive. So, Krishna says it is actually I who give the heat energy. It is I who am manifesting as the heat energy. And similarly, we need water. So, it is Krishna who is providing water and Krishna is withholding water. Now, here, Krishna is taking the conception into something broader. So till now, in the previous verse, it was more in terms of positives. Nugatir, I am the shelter, I am the well-wisher, I am the maintainer, I am the destination. So we see God in the positives of the world. But what about the negatives? In this world, there are positives as well as negatives. So what about the negatives? So we may say that rains come, it is good. But when rains don't come, we may say that is bad. So, if the rains coming is by due to God's will, then is the rains not coming also by God's will? So, here the point which you have to understand is that God is neutral. That is, Krishna has talked about already in 9.9, Udaseena Vadaseena. That whatever creation, maintenance, destruction happens, he is like a judge, overseeing, but not having an emotional agenda against anyone. He is detached, unbiased, neutral. But the point is, we see the positive and the negative both as manifestations of the power of the absolute truth. So when rains come heavily and there are huge floods, when we want to use some water, we may use a hose and we can discharge some amount of water. If there is a big fire, then we may get a big hose and a fire brigade company might have a big hose to shore large quantities of water. But who can shore as much water as the rains can? When there are torrential rains, the sheer amount of water that comes down and it floods the area is amazing. So in the context, it may have a destructive result. But the point is, when you see it as a display of power, then you understand it's awesome. So, a devotee learns to see God in both the positives and the negatives of the world. We know that Prabhupada, when he was in Calcutta, and at that time, the bombs were falling. The Japanese were bombing Calcutta because they wanted to attack from the east and conquer India. So, at that time, there were bomb shelters made, and all the people started going and staying in the bomb shelters. And Prabhupada decided, refused to go, and Prabhupada wanted to do worship of his deities. So he was making kachoris and offering the kachoris to deities, and he was thinking, when the bombs are falling, he would hear the bombs falling, and he says, this is also Krishna coming. But then he said, Prabhupada, this is not a very pleasant form of Krishna. So devotee sees Krishna in everything, but at the same time a devotee also recognizes the material level, certain manifestations of Krishna are positive, certain manifestations are negative. Now when we say Krishna is coming, what does it mean? Is it that Krishna is on the side of the Japanese when the Japanese, and Krishna is against the Indians and the Britishers, and Krishna is destroying them through the bombs? No. Krishna doesn't have any specific agenda in such situations. The point is, the destructive force, the sheer destructive force, and the arrival of death. Death ultimately, you know, is the greatest conqueror in the world. The person may become very powerful, very strong, but then when that comes, tuck, in one sweeping blow, that person and everything that person has cherished is knocked down. So in that sense, death is very powerful. So death, the sheer power of death, overpowers the power of the most powerful conqueror in the world. And that power of death is the manifestation of Krishna. So Manishi is able to see that also. So when we talk about Amritam Chaiva Mrityushcha, that it is Krishna who gives us immortality. It is Krishna who comes as mortality. It's contrasting, isn't it? How can the same God be immortality and mortality also? So actually, Krishna comes and descends and gives his message and displays his pastimes so that we can attain immortality. So he exists in mortality, he exists immortally, and he invites us to exist at the level of immortality in spiritual existence and devotion to him. But for those who choose otherwise, then he appears as death, and he continues their he arranges for the oversees the continuation of their journey in the cycle of birth and death. So in that sense, Krishna is both Amritam Chaiva Mrityushcha. Sadasachaham Arjuna. Sadasachaham, that I am the temporary and I am the eternal, I am the material and I am the spiritual. This has been elaborately and technically analyzed by the Vedic Acharyas. I will not go too much into that technical analysis here. But suffice it to say, Prabhupada simply translated this as, I am matter and spirit. So, why matter and spirit specifically? Because we have talked about in 7.4 and 7.5 how matter and spirit are both energies of Krishna. And then in 7.6, Krishna has said that whatever exists in material existence is essentially a combination of both, and both come from him. So, etad yonini bhutani sarvani tyupadharaya. So, whatever exists, it is a combination of matter and spirit. And ultimately, he says, for matter and spirit, I am the aham krishnasya jagata prabhava pralayastatha, that I am the beginning and I am the end, I am the sustenance also. So in that sense, Krishna is helping us to see everything that we find in the material manifestation, the positive and negative, with a spiritual vision. So here Krishna describes Vishwarupa Upasana, whatever we see manifest in the universe, how to see it connected with him. So now Krishna is revealing something very important over here, which is often not known to those who are doing Vishwarupa Upasana. What is that? When the normal people do Vishwarupa Upasana, they do not necessarily know that it is Krishna whom they are worshipping through the Vishwarupa. That's why in the Bhagavatam, when Vishwarupa Upasana is talked about, it is talked about as the first step in God realization. And from that first step, later steps will come. So it's the first step, because one starts thinking of God in terms of his greatness as manifested in the gigantic universal manifestation. So, but here Krishna is helping the Vishwarupa Upasak understand that actually all this is connected with me, and all this is ultimately going to lead to me. So I am the ultimate goal of all this. So now Krishna will talk about the Pratikopasakas, Pruthaktvena Bahudha, those who worship the Devatas. So Krishna says, they are also worshipping me, but indirectly. So, Traividyamam Soma Papu Tapapa यज्ञैरिष्ट्वा स्वर्गतिं प्रार्थयन्ते ते पुण्यमासाद्य सुरेन्द्रलोकम् अश्नन्ति दिव्यान् द्विदेव भोगान्। सो त्रैविद्या, त्रैविद्या रेफर्स टू थ्री वेदास। कृष्णा जस्ट अर्लियर रेफर टू द ऋक्साम यजुरेव च एंड द थ्री वेदास। सो नाउ त्रैविद्या माम, सो नाउ व्हाट डू दिस वेदास टीच? दे एक्चुअली टीच द डूइंग ऑफ कर्मकांड रिचुअल्स बाय विच वन कैन अटेन स्वर्ग। त्रैविद्या माम सोमपः पूत पापा, सोमपः, सोमपः मीन्स दोज हु ड्रिंक सोम, सोम रस इज वन काइंड ऑफ अमृत, नॉट एग्जैक्टली द सेम अमृत एज व्हाट वाज गॉट फ्रॉम द चर्निंग ऑफ द मिल्क ओशन, बट दिस इज काइंड इज अ ड्रिंक विच इज which is conducive to the attainment of Swarga. That means when there is sacrifices are performed at that time, Soma is also there as a part of sacrifice, and by drinking that one gets Punya. So now in this world there is intoxication, and when people drink, people take intoxication, then what happens? And first of all, a person who thinks that something which is intoxicating will make me happy is foolish, and then when a person drinks, that makes the person even more foolish. So it's like foolishness squared, and what happens is it leads to people into terrible tamoguna. And when people get drunk, it's like a temporary spate of madness which people choose to undergo. And when a person becomes drunk, at that time the person may speak incoherently, may walk into a wall, may sort of fall down and by the side of the street, may even drive a car crazily and run over somebody, may do all sorts of terrible things. And if you observed carefully, neutrally, dispassionately, you would say that a person who is drunk is not different from a person who is mad. So alcoholism is like temporary self-induced madness. It's a self-induced form of intensity. Self-chosen. So one chooses it and then it comes upon oneself. So often many alcoholics, when they're not taking alcohol, they're sober, normal people. But when the urge for alcohol comes, and they just become like a terribly different person. So that is the effect of middle intoxication. But here Krishna is talking about something entirely different. So some people compare Soma with, and they take, say, Soma is also similar to intoxicant, and even Vedic rituals intoxicants were taken. Actually, Soma is entirely different. See, normal alcohol and other intoxicants, they take our consciousness down towards tamoguna, whereas Soma takes our consciousness upwards towards sattva. So, and actually it is also very enjoyable, it is also delicious, and also stimulates the senses for enjoyment, but it's all within the framework of dharma. So somapa puta papa, that's why what happens, it is said these people, they drink soma puta papa, they become purified of papa. Yagya rishtva, they are actually worshipping me through yagya. Maam word is important. They are worshipping me through yagya rishtva. Traividya maam was in the first line. Yagya rishtva, and what is their goal? So to go to swarga, one has to acquire adequate punya. So swargatim prarthayante, so by doing this yagya, by drinking the soma as a part of the yagya sacrifice, one is prarthayante, is praying, aspiring for going to heaven, swargatim. And then te punyam asadya, when they acquire adequate punya, then what happens? Surendra lokam. So then they attain Sura Indra. So Indra is referred to here as Sura Indra, the Indra of the king of the gods, that is Indra Loka. And there Ashnanti Divyan, they enjoy celestial delights. So the word Divya can have different meanings based on the context. See, the word Divya, when it is used in 4.9, Janma Karma Chame Divyam, there Divya refers to transcendental. Whereas here Divya refers to celestial. Now what is the difference between celestial and transcendental? There are three levels of existence. There is terrestrial, there is celestial, and there is transcendental. Or we could say spiritual. So terrestrial is earthly. That terra firma, the ground. So the earth. Terrestrial is that which is referred to, that which is connected with the earth. Then celestial is that which is connected with the higher level, the skies, the higher levels of existence, the heavens. And then the spiritual or the transcendental refers not just to the higher material, but that which is higher than matter itself. It is not the higher material levels of existence, but the higher than material levels of existence that I talked about. So therefore, here the Bhagavad Gita will lead us in the next verse. We'll see. Bhagavad Gita tells us, don't seek for higher material happiness. Seek higher than material happiness. What is the difference? Seek higher material happiness means, in a sense, in this earthly matter system are not so attractive. The people's bodies are not so attractive in this world. Attraction also is very short-lived. Attractiveness also very short-lived. But in the heavens, people are far more beautiful, far, far more handsome. And they stay good-looking also for a long time. So I will go and enjoy over there. However, there also everything is temporary. So we'll see, the verses will tell us that don't seek higher material happiness. Seek higher than material happiness. That means seek for that happiness which is higher than material, which is ultimately spiritual happiness. So here the word Divyan refers to the higher material happiness. It refers to celestial. It doesn't refer to spiritual. Divideva Bhogan. Divideva Bhogan refers to, Divi refers to heavens. So the word Divi and Bhuvi are often contrasted in the Vedic context. That Divi is the heavenly and the Bhuvi is the earthly. So Divideva Bhogan. Deva Bhogan is that which is enjoyed by the devatas. So here people are aspiring to go and enjoy in the heavens. Now Krishna has talked about this karma kanda and going to heavens for enjoying earlier also in 2.42 and 43. And there he has said that people who want this are avipaschitaha. Yam imam pushpitam vacham pravadanti avipaschitaha. So in 2.42 he has said that they are not very discriminating people. But here Krishna is now trying to give them the discriminating capacity by telling them that actually they are also worshipping me only. But the problem is they are not worshipping me directly. They are worshipping me indirectly through the manifestations of devatas. And their desire is not to come to me. Their desire is to go to heavens. So Krishna is telling over here that even the karmakandi rituals are also worship of him. But the problem is because it is not done in consciousness of him, so it doesn't lead to the attainment of him. So what happens for such people? Those who go to the heavenly planets, they'll go to the heavenly planets, but afterwards what will happen? As described in the next verse. Tetam bhuktva svargalokam vishalam kshine punne martilokam vishanti evam trai dharma mano prapanna gatagatam kama kama labhante. So, tetam bhuktva, they will enjoy svargalokam vishalam, and what they will enjoy is vishalam, huge, giant, large amounts of happiness they will enjoy. As compared to the earth, what they enjoy is enormous. But then kshine punye, the punya is getting exhausted, and once the punya gets exhausted, martyalokam vishanti, they'll come back to this earthly planet system. And in this way, what happens? So this is the specific destination of those people. But overall, what is the nature of this journey? Evam trai dharmam. So in this way, those who follow trai dharma. Trai dharma refers to, in the previous verse, the word was used, trai vidya somapapu tapapa. So trai vidya is that which is talked about in the three Vedas. So trai dharma can refer to the follow of the three Vedas. Trai dharma can also refer to those who are doing dharma artha kama. So they just get caught in dharma artha kama and they don't aspire for moksha at all. So these are three levels in the three purusharthas. एवं त्रय धर्म मनु प्रपन्ना. सो दोज़ हू फॉलो दिस गतागतम काम कामा लभन्ते. सो गता अगतम दैट मीन्स बर्थ एंड डेथ. सो दे जस्ट गो ऑन इन दिस काम कामा लभन्ते. सो काम कामा. सो काम कामा इज इंटरेस्टिंग वर्ड विच इज कम अर्लियर ऑल्सो इन द भगवद गीता. सो काम कामा इज डिजायरर ऑफ डिजायर, डिजायरर ऑफ एंजॉयमेंट, डिजायरर ऑफ लस्ट. सो दोज़ हू डिजायर सेंस एंजॉयमेंट लभन्ते. So they will get, what do they get? Gata agatam. They continue on cycle of birth and death. So Krishna has told earlier in 2.72, Nakama kami, there he is, Dapuryamanama chala pratishtam, Samudramapa pravishanti advad, Tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve, So shanti mapnoti nakama kami. So who will get peace? One who, for whom desires come in, like rivers come into the ocean, but one doesn't get disturbed by them. That person will attain peace, and not a person who is kama kami, one who is a desirer of desires. So, gata gatam kama kama labhante. So here Krishna is telling very carefully and very clearly that ultimately the whole system of demigod worship centered on karma kanda is futile. It may lead to some temporary benefit in terms of enjoyment, but actually for a intelligent person, anything that gives a result that is less than eternal is less intelligent, because we all want everlasting happiness, and as long as we aspire for anything other than eternal happiness, we are selling ourselves short, we are cheating ourselves, we are depriving ourselves, we are underutilizing our potential, we are going for less than the best. You know, when the best is possible for us, why should we go for less than the best? So sometimes the best may be, you know, if we want to take a new house, then we would want to take the best house, isn't it? Now, of course, the best house may not be affordable for us. The best house may in some way not be convenient for us. But if we had a choice, other factors, if they could take care of themselves, then we would naturally go for the best. So similarly, Krishna is telling over here, why not go that, you know, we as souls have the capacity to go for the best. And the future verses will reveal how that actually worshipping Him and attaining eternity is not all that difficult. It is not beyond our means. But Krishna will tell that it is not very easy as compared to this Traivedyamama Sompatu Puta Papa, as compared to doing these big, big complex rituals. Worshipping Him is much easier. Patram pushpam phalam toyam. It is much, much easier. But here, so that Krishna will tell that. But here the point is that those who get some, those who are punya and go to heaven, they may get some results. But ultimately those results are temporary. And that's why one shouldn't get too elated. Now today, most people may not believe so much strongly in heavens and may not aspire for heavens. People are there in Hindu culture, when somebody dies, they write below the photo, Swargavasi, Kailashavasi. Not so many people write Vaikunthavasi, but people write only Swargavasi or Kailashavasi. So they write Swargavasi, but really just by writing Swargavasi, it's not that the person is going to go to Swarga. So people may have that sentiment, oh yes, the person has gone to Swarga. But the point is, going to Swarga requires doing certain punya. And when people don't do punya, they will not go to Swarga. And even if they go to Swarga, it is not that they are going to stay there forever. So even Swarga is temporary. And here Krishna is talking about a trajectory that is relatively rare in this world, and it is few people who follow it, but even that is futile. That means the path of material dharma, of punya, is Krishna saying it is ultimately futile, because it keeps one in the cycle of birth and death. So you see that actually whatever we get is a result of our past good karma. And our past good karma is, our past good karmic credits are like a bank account. And if somebody is doing somebody has got some savings, and then that person decides to go to a hill station and enjoy. So then person, when he's going to the hill station, may be enjoying, but what is happening? The bank balance is decreasing with every day of enjoyment. The bank balance is decreasing. What is going to happen? At one particular point, the bank balance will end, and then the person will have to fall back to material existence, will fall back to normal life, where again the stress and the strain and the struggle for existence and the cutthroat competition, all that will come back. So that is just a temporary escape, whereas and that is not lasting. So in contrast, if somebody aspires for something that is lasting, that is far more intelligent. So like that, a person may do some punya and go to swarga. Now in swarga, people don't add to their punya credits. Swarga is a place where whatever punya one has acquired, that is exhausted. So it's like, you know, somebody is in the ocean, and we are in a part of ocean where things are very stormy. The waves are very stormy. And I look aside, oh, that part of the ocean looks very peaceful. You know, I just swim to that area. I make a lot of efforts and I swim to that area. Now actually, even if it is calm right now, is any part of the ocean going to be permanently calm? Waves are going to come there and the waves are going to toss me over there also. So trying to get a better material situation is not going to work. Because ultimately everything in this material world is temporary. It's going to shake sooner or later. So even Swarga is not eternal. Somebody might seem to be in a very comfortable material situation. Very wealthy, very powerful, very good looking. You know, there are business tycoons or sports stars or movie stars who are often the dream and the envy of most people. But what a spiritually astute person sees is that all these people, it's like all of us are in a material ocean, but somebody is seated on a huge iceberg. Now, the iceberg may be cold, but assume that the cold is not causing any discomfort. But a person is safe from the waves and the turbulence. But as the sun is rising, the temperature is increasing, the iceberg is melting. And when the iceberg melts, this person who was sitting so comfortably suddenly finds, I was sitting so comfortably, just falls into the ocean. So like that, you know, all of us have some good karma because of which we are in a comfortable situation. But then, that good karma, any moment it may get exhausted, we may fall back into the material, miserable material existence. And that's what is going to happen to everyone sooner or later. Those who seem to be comfortable also. So those who go to heaven, it's like that for them also. They may temporarily in a comfortable situation, but after that, they're going to fall back. So, that's why, rather than trying for a comfortable material situation, one should seek the comfort of the spiritual destination. And that is what Krishna will talk about in the next verse. And we'll discuss that in our next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.